Talking Fugitive. An SAV production. Starring Kitty and Bobby as the host. Freed by fate to pursue an in-depth discussion of television's finest dramatic series ever. A Fugitive.
That's a little older than I thought. We're leaving out one of the hosts. Hi, everybody. Back for its second year already. Entering its second year of broadcast, well, I was going to say excellence, but that phrase has been used. Talking Fugitive, now with Kitty and Bobby and Ken on KSAV. And I feel like, if we, you know, we started this only about a year ago, and here we are already in year number two. All right, the hosts are ready to go. If you want to participate in the program tonight, 800-407-KSAV. If you want to email during the show, you can send it to me, talk@ksav.org. Any other time, you can contact them at fugitive@ksav.org. All right, Bobby Neer, why don't you start things off here in year number two?
Okay, Dave, we are proud to announce this evening that just in time to totally save the Christmas season, along comes the perfect gift, and that is the Fugitive Views and Reviews Volume 2, covering the second season of the series, which has now been published. This new volume kicks up where the first one left off, starting with episode number 31 of the second series. There are reviews of all of the stories and results of your polls. Season 2 is very interesting. This book has reviews of some of the best and most classic episodes of the series, including Man in a Chariot and World's End, which began the season. The End is But the Beginning, which is around the middle of the season, and one of the greatest episodes of them all, Escape into Black. And the cover photo on this book is from Escape into Black, from one of the pivotal moments in that story. So this is, we believe, the perfect Christmas gift. It fits very nicely under the Christmas tree. And we urge people to buy it because if you were going to buy a new plasma TV and put it under the Christmas tree, this fits a lot better. It's a lot less expensive, and it's a lot more entertaining than anything that's on TV today. So the Fugitive Views and Reviews Volume 2 is available currently at Amazon.com. It will, we assume, soon be available at Barnes & Noble. It is also available from the publisher, WastelandPress.com.
Do you have a link on your page for people to buy it?
Oh, yes. Yes, it is not there yet on our website, but it will be within a day or so. We're just waiting for Barnes & Noble to put it up.
Okay, so that means people can go to the KSAV homepage. They can go to the Talking Fugitive page, and there will be a link up there to buy it, okay?
And thanks very much to Ken, who put it together just as well as he did the first one. Thank you, Ken. And
thank you, Ken.
We are very happy about this. Two books down and two books yet to go to complete the entire series. Okay, tonight's subject is a carryover from 2 weeks ago when we started discussing episode number 77, Wife Killer. And if the discussion and debate 2 weeks ago was mainly about the very exciting car chase down mountain roads in which Kimball is chasing the one-armed man, then this discussion tonight is about a remarkable moment in Acts 3 and 4 in which the one-armed man, now newly named Fred Johnson, actually confesses to killing Helen Kimball. This is a remarkable moment because it's episode 77. There are 43 episodes to go. We don't expect this to happen until the end of the series. That's when he's going to confess, if indeed it's going to turn out that way. Instead, you've got this happening now. It is quite a surprise. It comes, I believe, in Act 3. The one-armed man survives the car crash that he was in at the beginning of the story. And Kimball and his reporter friend, Barbara Webb, have taken him to a girls' camp that is closed for the season. And he's injured, but Kimball doesn't know exactly how injured he may be. So Johnson is put down on a table there, in which he lapses in and out of consciousness. And after a while, of course, the main thing here is what's going to happen. Is Richard Kimball going to get the confession that he knows that he needs? So at one point, he simply decides to pull a fast one, and he looks over at Barbara Webb, and he starts to discuss whether or not it's even worth giving any more medical care. Maybe he'll just let him die. And that's when Johnson takes the bait, opens his eyes, and Kimball leans across him and asks him, "Did you kill my wife?" And Johnson nods his head, doesn't say anything, because he's got an oxygen mask over his face, and he nods his head twice. And this is a remarkable moment in the series. As a matter of fact, the series is over right here. Well, we would assume it's over. I mean, what is left? Since the beginning of the series, we've been told that all Kimball really wants to do is catch the one-armed man and bring him back to Girard. I've, however, been one step behind him since we began this in questioning this and wondering exactly what is he going to do when he gets him and how is he going to get him to confess. Well, he just did confess. Unfortunately, Girard's not in the room, so that's not going to prove a whole lot. So Kimball gets his confession, and at this most important moment of his life so far, what does Richard Kimball do? He decides he's exhausted and he's going to go to sleep. And that's what he does, leaving Barbara Webb to write up a confession that they plan to have Johnson sign. This looks like a disaster in the making, and indeed it is. I can think of a lot of things he might have done other than this. Ken, I know that on the message board in your review, you discussed at length what you think should have happened here, and what is that?
I was very frustrated with that scene. I think the writers and the producers focused too much on Barbara Webb and her walking around and looking at Kimball and talking to Kimball and all that. I think in this Act 3 and a little bit of Act 4, they should have focused on Kimball actually having a conversation with Fred Johnson. I know he's hurt from the crash, but at least have him be able to talk and have these two talk to each other. Kimball still does not know what happened that night. All he saw was Fred Johnson run from his house, and he's been looking for the one-armed man for 2.5 years. Okay, he's got him. He's got him in the room. The first thing I do if I'm Richard Kimball is tie Fred Johnson to the bed so he can't get up and escape. That's the first thing I do, tie him down. Second thing to do is to talk with him. "Hey, Fred, I saw you running from my house. Every time I look at you, you're running away from me. What happened? Please tell me what happened to my wife." Instead, what do we have? We have no conversation at all. I was very frustrated. It was just like in Landscape with Running Figures. You know, I wanted Marie Girard to open her eyes and see Kimball. I never got that moment. So here I am. I'm watching the scene, Kimball and Johnson, you know, face to face, and they don't say one word to each other. Kimball asks him the question, "Did you kill my wife?" Johnson puts his head up, nods, and then puts his head back down. Kimball falls back into his chair like he's in shock. So I wanted dialogue. Kitty, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What do you think, Kitty?
Well, I do agree to a certain extent, because all we see is Kimball says, "Did you kill my wife?" He nods his head affirmatively, and then he passes out again. Kimball decides he's going to take a nap, and Barbara says, "I'll type up the confession." And she appears to be typing up a full-blown novel for Fred Johnson to sign. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, does she really know that much about the Kimball case? She knows the details of it. I agree with you. It would have been nice to see him actually grill him and say, "Okay, what exactly happened? Tell me about the night. What did you do? Why were you in the house?"
Yeah.
You know, and why are you running away from me? Because if you didn't kill my wife, you're certainly acting like a guilty guy. So if you didn't kill my wife, then who did? What did you see in the house? So.
Well, I, on the message board a couple days ago, that came up, and I posted on there that I don't know that Kimball really cares about this, or that he needs to care about it. I think this is a little more basic than that, which is, did you kill my wife? You're either guilty or you're not. How did he do it? Why did he do it? What happened that night? It's not really Richard Kimball's problem. If there's a trial, if he does successfully get him back to Girard, now that's another story. I would agree with Ken, though, that it would have made for a more interesting scene than just having him nod his head and pass out. That really wasn't much. That is something of a letdown, and I'm not sure why they did it, except that the writer just didn't know what to do with it. That is rather regrettable. A lot of it doesn't make any sense. I mean, like you just said, Barbara Webb is typing up a confession. Well, you know, at the beginning of this story, she just happened to be in the right place at the right time. It's not like she's known for doing a lot of research in the Kimball case, and she was proactive about it and decided to be there, so she comes armed with all this information. She's in no position to sit there and type up a confession, because that confession couldn't possibly say more than, yes, my name is Fred Johnson, and I killed Helen Kimball.
Yeah.
That's not going to be enough. You've got to put in there the time that it happened, the time of day or the time of night that it happened. Was the door unlocked or was it locked? What was the murder weapon? I mean, the questions are endless.
Precisely, and it looks like she's typing all of those details up, but my question would be, how does she know that? You know, it's all Fred Johnson has done is that he nodded his head affirmatively.
Yeah.
I mean, because typically in a confession, what the police are looking for, they want some type of proof that the confession is real in that the killer is going to know something that only the killer would know. And so how is it that Barbara Webb is going to type up this confession that's convincing?
Have to do is go back to a previous episode that we have not covered here on this show yet, called May God Have Mercy. And in that episode, Telly Savalas' character, Victor Leonetti, decides to save Richard Kimball by confessing to killing Helen Kimball because he was a family friend. And he had the opportunity to do it. And in a very interesting scene, I mean, Gerard doesn't believe it at all anyway.
Yeah.
Grills him relentlessly. He wants to know everything. Was the door open? Was it closed? What was she wearing? I mean, you got to be kidding me. You see right there that nobody's going to be able to confess to this crime. I mean, the one-armed man is not going to be able to confess to the crime unless he can tell everything that happened that night. So this is completely not believable.
Another thing I would have done, Bob, if I was Richard Kimball,
yeah.
Is there a phone nearby? I want to call my lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
And also, Kimball should say, hey, I better call Gerard right now on the phone and say, hey, Gerard, I've got the guy I saw running from my house. What should I do? I don't know about that.
Gerard probably would have said, who cares?
Well, the phone thing is very interesting because writers back in those days had it a lot easier than writers do today. Because now, of course, almost everybody carries a cell phone. So it was easy for the writer to simply say, hey, you can't call anybody. They're at a closed-down camp. But there must have been a payphone there somewhere.
Yeah. Call collect and say, hey, I want to talk to my lawyer right in the spot.
All he had to do was call his sister and say, listen, I got him. You got to get that lawyer back. This is the one that he had in Trial by Fire. And get that lawyer, ask him what we're supposed to do now. I've got him. Now I don't know what to do. Do I turn myself in?
Yeah.
What is going to happen next? Instead, he goes to sleep. I mean, it looks so silly. It almost looks as though the writer was simply stuck with what to do. So he said, I don't know how to get out of this. I can go to sleep.
And then Johnson gets up from the bed, and it looks like he's going to get Barbara Webb.
Yeah.
A little tense scene there, but I didn't buy it. I didn't buy it at all.
It's hard to buy it because he's lapsing in and out of consciousness anyway.
Yeah.
He probably doesn't have enough energy to really do anything. And is he going to do anything to her, or is he going to just run away, or what? But this is another one of those times when Kimball does something irrational in not following through and not doing the next thing. There's one other thing I have to mention about this before we go to the break, and that is that I mentioned it in my review. There's a moment there where Kimball tells Barbara Webb what's going to happen about the confession and all of that, and she says to him directly, when Kimball says he's going to confess, and she says, but what if he doesn't? And Kimball simply says, he will, and that's the end of it. There's not another line after that, and I say, what is he talking about? What do you mean he will? He will for what reason? He simply goes, oh, he will.
All right. Well, what we will do right now is take that break you just warned everybody about. It's real quick, only about 30 seconds. So you don't have time to go to get a snack or anything, folks. Stick around. We'll be right back for part two of this. You're on Sherevision Radio.
I'm Dave.
Dave White from Talkin' Television with America's guru, Tim Carmody.
Hi, kids.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. And listen next year.
Bye, kids.
All right, and we are back. I warned you real quick. This was the Fugitive was an ABC program, if memory serves me correctly, and myself being an all-knowing about television. Tonight, Talkin' Television with Dave White has Loreen Arbus, who is Leonard Goldenson's daughter and is a producer and a television executive herself. And we're going to be talking about Leonard Goldenson and all that he did to make ABC from a nothing into the number one network. That'll be on in just a little over an hour, 7:30 Pacific time. All right. What was that, Bob?
Was he responsible for The Fugitive, do you know?
I don't know, but we can find out tonight.
Well, I hope you'll ask him.
All right. And so let's get back to The Fugitive now. Bobby, you take over again.
Okay. So we have this situation with the one-armed man being unconscious, and we don't exactly know what's going to happen after this. But the one interesting thing about this story is the fact that we get more of a one-armed man than we've ever gotten. He's got a name now, and he's showing some emotion now. So he's become actually a real person. And this is very interesting. Kitty, I know you have an email to read from Phil regarding the one-armed man.
Yeah. It says, this episode is terrific for many reasons, but I like it because it reintroduces us to the one-armed man. The wraith-like specter that Richard Kimble has been chasing for the last two-plus years, we get to see him a little bit more and learn a little bit more about him. I was impressed with the actor who portrayed the one-armed man, Bill Raisch. He must have been a terrific person to do what he did with the one arm that most of us require two arms for. In the episode Search in a Windy City, he lit his cigarette in the telephone booth, powerful. In the episode Escape into Black, slogging it as a dishwasher in a hot, steamy kitchen, impressive. In our current episode, Wife Killer, climbing over a chain-link 6-foot-tall fence, raising up on a flimsy cot by just sitting up, not using his other hand and arm to raise himself. How many of us can do that? In his book, The Fugitive Recaptured, author Ed Robertson has devoted three paragraphs on page 126 to Bill Raisch, the one-armed man. I hope that Mr. Raisch was proud of his accomplishments in life. He was perfect as the one-armed man.
Well, I think this is one of the really fascinating performances in TV, because Bill Raisch was not an actor, actually. He was a stuntman and a stand-in during his career. He really did only have one arm, and he lost his arm during World War II in a fire aboard a ship he was serving on. And at one time, before he got into acting and being in the movies and TV, he was a professional dancer with his wife. So it's obvious here that they picked him not for his acting ability, but for the way he looked. And I have to say that he looked the part. I mean, he looked like a vagrant. He looked like he'd been roaming around the country. And he looks pretty dangerous. So I always, you know, even though the few times he doesn't really utter any lines until we get to season four, he's not very good at it, but, you know, he kind of overlooked that because I think they went instead for the fact that he looked rather sinister. So
well, and that may very well be why the writers initially didn't have him say a lot, because he wasn't necessarily a regular trained actor.
Right.
In fact, I remember reading...
whose phone's ringing?
Not mine.
I remember reading that Barry Morse had said that he talked with Bill Raisch at one point during season four, and Bill Raisch was very nervous about that he had a bunch of lines to do for these scripts, and he said, Barry, I don't know how to do this, and he said, you just say the lines like you talk regularly in real life. It's not hard.
Yeah.
But he was very apprehensive about that.
Ken?
Yeah, I thought the producers did an excellent job with the three main characters of The Fugitive, David Janssen, Barry Morris, and Bill Raisch. I think Gerard and Janssen, you know, they made the whole series, obviously. But the one-armed man, I think you know, when the first time I saw him on the, you know, in Searching Winnie City, he looked like a menace. And I don't know, you know, at that moment when I saw him the first time, obviously we saw him also in The Girl from Little Egypt, but I was hooked on the series. And I think when you're producing a series, you know, whatever television show you have, I think the successful ones are the ones where the characters, you can really identify with them, and you care about them, and you want to see what happens to them. And these three guys in the Fugitive series, they just hooked me, and they did excellent job in their acting throughout the whole 4 years, you know. I agree. The one-armed man, I mean, who else could play the one-armed man but Bill Raich?
The one thing that this series, I have a lot of criticism about the series, this, that, and the other, but the one thing that is above criticism with this series is their amazing ability to, in casting. This is maybe the best cast series ever on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, every part's not only the main characters, but it's the guest stars. They fit perfectly with what they're supposed to do. It's really quite remarkable. And that's a highly underrated thing. People don't realize that casting is important. If you get the right actors and the right parts, that changes everything. So in this case, that was a risk. That was a risk to get an actor or a person who was not really a trained actor, because you didn't really know whether or not there were going to be any lines for him to do or not, and could he do them. So I think that it's so deeply ingrained in people's minds, even though later on this year when we compare the two series and the movie and the one-armed men and the Gerards against each other and all of that, we'll get more into this. But in this case, before we've seen anybody else later on, I mean, he is the one-armed man. There's no question about that. And that's remarkable for anybody who really isn't that great of an actor. We currently are running two polls on our message board. Two special polls, one of them having to do with what Kimball should have done after he captured the one-armed man. And the second poll that we are running, both polls are getting a good bit of attention, and the second poll that we are running right now is kind of controversial, because Kitty posted on the board a few days ago that here we have the one-armed man, and at the end of this story here, Kimball runs away and Gerard catches up to Barbara Webb, and the one-armed man is still there, and she's telling him, listen, I was here, I saw the confession, and does he want to hear any of it? No, he's not interested at all. Up until now, he's been saying that the one-armed man is simply a fantasy. He tells Kimball, you're just imagining things. There is nobody like that. Now, here is one, and Kimball says, this is the guy, and he's got a witness that this is the guy. And is it enough now? Does Gerard even hesitate for a moment in thinking maybe there's something to this? No. And so we've got a poll running asking, how realistic is this? Is it time now, as we're heading for the fourth season, for Gerard to have just a little bit of doubt, something to make it a little more interesting? Kitty, I know you feel strongly about this, about Gerard being just a robotic-like figure who just goes after Kimball without thinking about anything.
Oh, yeah, precisely. I mean, as I've said, you know, and I'm unmerciful, you know, I think again, it's pure laziness on the part of the writers of that series. Quinn Martin, the producer, I think bears some responsibility as well. He should have insisted on some continuity. You know, when you've got a character like Gerard who questions Davy Lambert in Fatso and Victor Leonetti in May God Have Mercy, you know, when they confess to killing Helen Kimball, now you've actually got a one-armed guy who fits Kimball's description, who confessed, and he ain't the least bit interested in talking to him. At the very least, you'd think he'd want to talk to him to trip up his story like he did with the other two, but he ain't even the least bit interested in it. You know, which tells me that if anything, the character of Gerard has digressed in his personality. He's basically just become this one-dimensional, villainous, bad cop.
I'm just doing my job, ma'am.
Yeah, and, you know, and again, there's no consequences for it, which I have remedied in the story I have coming up in December that we'll be posting on the website.
Oh,
Bob?
Good.
Ken?
Good. I agree, Kitty. This would have been a good point in the series to have a nice end scene to this episode. And what I would have done, and I was kind of hoping for it, but it never happened. But if I was writing the story, in the epilogue, I would have had Gerard coming to the hospital, okay? He's going to see the one-armed man, just ask him a couple questions. And when he gets to the room, he finds out that the one-armed man's gone. So then we get a look on Gerard's face like,
Yeah, like, well, why did he run away?
Or, right.
I mean, was it just because of the car theft thing, or was
yeah.
there maybe something more to it?
And so, you know, we know Gerard is a brilliant guy, and he looks for every single clue like a matchstick in Never Wave Goodbye, right? He looks
yeah.
for a matchstick. So that would have been a nice scene. Instead, we get another cop come to the hospital, and he finds out that the hospital attendant got knocked over the head, and Johnson's gone. I do like that scene at the end of this episode, though, that Johnson goes outside the hospital.
Yeah.
He kind of turns the corner, and then he's just gone. And then and then we get Kimball on the phone saying, please let me talk to Lieutenant Gerard. And then he says, I'll wait. And then the narrator goes, and Kimball has to wait.
Right.
And we're kind of left hanging. I mean, how about a part two episode, Bob? What do you think?
Well, it's possible, but I'm a little worried about diluting the story by doing two parts. I like it the way it is, but I wouldn't have objected to that. We have a very interesting post on the message board tonight. I know Kitty hasn't seen it. I don't know if you have or not, but it's by Phil, the same person who wrote the email. And Phil is a former cop, I do believe. And he takes on this whole issue. It's a very interesting post. People should really go and read it, in which he suggests pretty much what you're suggesting and goes a lot further than that, that Gerard should have questioned him, should have wondered why it is he's running away, should have wondered who he is Johnson his real name, does he have a criminal record, do we have his fingerprints on file. These are all things, and at the end of his post he says this is shoddy police work. This is really very outrageously bad police work for Gerard to not do nothing and to send somebody over there to guard him later on, not right away. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And of course, you know, the story would have been even more interesting if Gerard has a little bit of doubt. But I think the problem here is that they had a winning formula and they were afraid to fool with it. Leave it alone. The ratings were still good at this point, but that's a risky thing to do. I mean, these days, if you have a series that runs 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, you have to make changes somewhere in the middle. Otherwise, the audience is going to get bored,
yeah.
and they're going to start looking at other things. It just does not work anymore. It worked here. They got away with it for a while, but the fourth season would have been much more interesting
yeah.
if they had gone down this route, and they didn't do it. And I think that is very regrettable. And I think today, if the series was on today, it would not be done that way. They would change it just a little. I mean, how can you possibly have... It was easy when the one-armed man had never been seen by Gerard. That's one thing. Then he can write it off and say, come on, this is a joke. There's no one-armed man. But when you've got a guy there and you've got a witness, Barbara Webb, who says, I'm telling you I was here, I saw it, you have to, at the very least, even if you don't believe it, you have to, at the very least, think a minute.
All right. Well, we've got to believe this. We're at the end of the program.
All right.
And I know time flies. Now, listen, due to vacations, you guys are going to be won't be back until January the 9th.
That's correct, and we want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. You too,
David. All right, well, I thank you very much, and I won't pull that old terrible see you next year line because that's too corny.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, all right, well, thanks
and
a lot.
Can I also just add really quickly that my story will be posting between Christmas and New Year's on the board, so if anybody's interested in reading an original Kimball story.
Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday of Christmas week.
All right. Good enough. And you heard it here first, folks. I'll see all of you guys, well, like I said, next year. The rest of you, stick around tonight in 1 hour talking television with Dave White, the tribute to Leonard Goldenson. So we'll hopefully see all of you then on Sherevision Radio.